Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Tonight, we are going into part two of the Cat Ward interview. I think you're going to find it to be very, very interesting. So sit back. Enjoy.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Hello there, Kat, and welcome back to the show. This is part two.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Always great to talk to you. Kat is a friend of mine, and we have many discussions about our unusual paranormal activities that go on, and so it's always fun. And I thought, you know, there was one point where I thought, you know, I really need to get her on the show, and so here you are, and I'm happy about it. So great, wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, I think that for those of our viewers and our listeners that are not familiar enough with you, why don't we just start from the beginning a little bit? And why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe one of your first moments when you thought in life something's unusual, or you might have had a paranormal experience, and then we'll just take it from there.
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in the town of Dieppe, New Brunswick. That's on the east coast of Canada. We lived in a three-story apartment building. We lived on the top floor, and it was a very, very creepy building. Very old building. It had no elevator, just the stairs. Before we moved in, many, many years before we moved in, the building used to be heated by a coal furnace in the basement. But by the time we moved in, it was switched over to electric heat. But that's just to show you how old the building was. It's not standing anymore. But the very first paranormal encounter that I recall having was in this building. It was a really trying to figure. So as soon as you walk in, you have the living room and then my parents' room. And then when you move to the left, we have the dining room and the washroom. And you keep going left, it's the kitchen and then my room. So my room and my parents' room were at the complete opposite end of the apartment. I had a really, really big bedroom. I have no siblings, so I didn't have to share it with anybody. And I had a big walk-in closet. And even today, my dad recalls my having screaming fits, I guess, night terrors, talking about the man in the closet. Mm-hmm. And it was the Hat Man. Mm-hmm. Now that at the time, I'd never heard of anything like that before, but he was about 4 feet tall. And I know this because I compared him to the height of my dresser that was in my room. He had no features whatsoever. It was just black. Cause I know some people, when they have encounters with the Hat Man, he's a lot taller and they always say he had red glowing eyes. They could see fangs. I saw nothing. This was a short guy. He had like a bolero hat. Yeah. And, I don't know if it was like a cape that he was wearing, or if it was some kind of a, like a long trench coat or whatever, because you couldn't tell. It was just black, blacker than black. And he would appear in my room. And we lived in the apartment from the age of, I think it was about 5 till about 13 years old. And after we left the apartment, I never saw him again. I don't remember how frequent I would see him. I don't recall that part, but I do know it was several times over the years of seeing this guy. And he used to scare the bejesus out of me. I'd have the covers, you know, just below my eyes, thinking, you know, don't move, don't breathe, I don't want him to notice that I'm there. He would never ever take notice of me, thankfully. I don't know what I would do, but he would just walk around my room, almost like he was looking for something, or I don't really know what he was doing, but I recall that he used to scare me all the time. And like I mentioned, he didn't take notice of me, but I always wondered, what's that?
So, okay. Yeah. But you just hit on, that's what I was going to ask. So he's walking around your room, or appears to be walking around your room. Was he walking or floating? Let's start with that.
Ooh, that I don't know. I've never been asked that before. I really don't know. Just know he was moving about in my room.
Okay, so he's moving about. So whether it's walking or floating, because, you know, the thing is when you're terrified, you're not going to notice that. Okay, so but you know what always interests me really about when I hear people talk about the Hat Man is the type of hat that the individual is wearing. Like, I mean, here's just crazy examples, but was it a cowboy hat? Was it some kind of a beret? I mean, you know, was it some kind of a golfer's hat? You know, was it one of those tall hats that magicians wear? Do you recall the style of the hat that this thing, it had on?
Yeah, it wasn't one of those tall, tall hats. It was a shorter hat, and I think they call it a bolero hat. Okay. That's the style that it looked like.
Okay.
But again, there was no, I couldn't see if there was any buckles or buttons on any of his attire. It was just a black form. Like I said, blacker than black. And it was dark in my room, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was the...
Did you say you saw his eyes?
No. He had no features at all. I know some people, when they talk about the Hat Man, the taller one at least, they say they see red glowing eyes, they can see fangs, you know, no features. It was just black.
Tell us what we're looking at here.
The building that's circled, that's the three-story apartment building that I was talking about that I lived in. We lived on the top floor. Now, the entire photo is the only photo I can find. I've been looking for a photo of the apartment building for years. This is the only photo I can find on a Facebook group. I think it was called Vintage Dieppe, I think. So, you know, my old hometown, lots of people post various photos, you know, and it's the only photo. So the photo that's right on the corner, that used to be a convenience store. And then I think it's three buildings in the building that circle, that's the apartment building that we lived in. And as I said, we lived on the top floor and no elevator, just had to use stairs. So it was fun bringing up groceries for Christmas trees every Christmas.
Yeah. You know, that's the one thing about when you're getting old, well, even when you're younger, it's just like drag the groceries up three flights of stairs. Was it about three flights of stairs?
Yeah. You'd go up some stairs, you'd turn around. I still remember you go up the stairs, you turn right, and then you turn right again, and you go walk along this corridor, you go up another flight of stairs. Yeah, so about three flights.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of this area. So if you're seeing this Hat Man in that building, now that everyone's had a visual of it, and you're kind of getting a gist that these things can show up just about anywhere, what do you think occurred in that area or around that spot or on that spot that may have drawn this thing to reside there?
I'm not really sure. I've been trying to research that area to see if anything in particular happened that would have made this entity appear, make himself known to me. Now, I do know the individual that lived in the same apartment building, the same apartment that we lived on the top floor, he used to be a bootlegger.
Oh.
I do, but I don't know what he looked like. I don't think he was 4 feet tall. I'm pretty sure he was taller than that. I think they called him Whitey was his name. I have no idea why. But I know for the long, I recall my parents telling me this later on, that for the longest time after we moved into the apartment building, people didn't know that he wasn't residing there anymore. And we would get people knocking at the door in the middle of the night wanting to buy their booze. And, you know, my dad or my mom, whoever answered the door, had to tell him, well, sir, he doesn't live here anymore, you know, when we don't sell booze. So, and it took the longest time for, you know, for the word to get out that, yeah, he doesn't live there anymore.
So that was the shortest little hat man. Or you did it look more like a, now this is what's difficult when you're young. So 4 feet tall, wearing a hat. Did we know for sure that it was a man or maybe a possibly of a teen or a young boy or a child? Could you even, a lot of times we think right off the bat, it's male. Obviously, because usually females back then weren't wearing hats that style. They're wearing other things of different styles. But I, you know, when you mention that, I'm thinking, is it a teen that she was actually seeing, or did you think it was just a short little man?
I always assumed it was a short man. I never thought that it was a teen or a female. I always felt it was a man.
Okay. All right. So now we've had this experience with this hat man. Anything else go on in that building, or was that just pretty much it? And did you move at some point?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. After we left the building and bought a house, I never encountered him again, but I always had him in the back of my mind. You know, who was he? What was he? What was he doing there? And then fast forward to from that time frame, I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about a hat man. So at the end of the show, I had messaged them, one of the hosts, and said, hey, I had an encounter, but it was the shorter hat man. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, this is the first time I ever, ever heard of this particular entity. So I was like, oh my God, somebody else has encountered an entity similar to what I encountered, but it was taller. And then Justin Cancellari, he was one of the hosts of Paratooth Radio. He was the person that I contacted. He sent me a YouTube video of an individual, a man who also had the encounter of the short version, just like I did. Oh. And he recreated it. And when I saw that video, every emotion came back from when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. For a split second, I was just like, it was exactly what I saw when I was a child. And I was just so amazed that somebody else had an encounter similar to mine.
What did this person ever talk about what this thing did around their presence, or what they thought they were actually witnessing on their behalf?
I don't recall. I just recall that he had reenacted. I have to try and find the video again and see if he actually mentions it.
Yeah.
But I had commented, it was a YouTube video. I commented, but that was, he had posted the video several years ago, and he never got back to me. So I don't know if he's even still on YouTube or what.
A lot of times people just don't even go back and bother looking. But all right, so now we've got that experience. So now you're getting a little bit older, okay? And have you figured out the point? Because when you see things like this, it's not like everybody can just see things like this. Sometimes this is just the beginning or the initiation or whatever of our abilities starting to expand out and perhaps shape shift into something else. So after that point, can you recall another situation where you might have experienced something different of a paranormal sort?
Yeah, well, first of all, growing up, I was born and raised French Roman Catholic. My family was always extremely, extremely religious, you know, going to church every weekend and everything. My mother would have the prayer beads and her Bible with her, and she would read from all the time. But she was sensitive as well. Growing up, she was able to communicate with her grandfather without him even being in the same building as her. And she thought that was normal. And she would tell others, you know, talking to her grandparents or her grandfather, and people would look at her, and then she realized, oh crap, I'm the only one, you know. So when I don't like to call myself psychic, I like to say that I'm sensitive, because I am sensitive to a lot of things. Yeah. So my mother my father as well, but my mother being sensitive as well, she wouldn't make me feel like I was crazy or, you know, you're just having a nightmare or whatever. She would sit down and talk to me and ask, you know, what are you experiencing? And she made me feel like this is normal, that a lot of people actually experience this. And there was a time that my parents and I, we used to travel a lot around the Maritimes on weekends, visit museums, you know, places like that. And we went to a place in Nova Scotia called Louisbourg. Cool. It was an old French fort. Mm-hmm. I think it was from the, 1800. No, I really don't recall the year. My parents and I were there, and this one building at the Heritage Museum there at Louisbourg, they were renovating it. So at the time, it was just my parents and I, and we had a tour guide with us describing the building, what it was used for and everything. I don't recall what the building was. I just recall that up the hall, I could hear booted footprints, and I was looking, and the tour guide is looking at me and saying, you know, because I want to go see what the footprints are. And so she looks at me and she stops explaining to my parents about the building, and she asked what I was doing. And I said, I hear footsteps up the hall. So she says, it's probably your ghost, probably thinking that's going to deter me from wanting to explore the building by myself. Mm-hmm. And I was intrigued. I'm like, ghosts? So I wanted to go see, but my parents are like, no, you cannot go. It's too dangerous. They're renovating. The work crews were done for the day. So it was just my parents, the tour guide, and I, and myself in the building at the time. But I heard those booted footprints, mm-hmm. footsteps mm-hmm. up the hall. Mm-hmm. And going back to the apartment that we lived in, my father, because of the big walk-in closet, he thought, okay, he's going to take me into the closet during the daytime to show me that everything's fine. There's no hat man. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. So he says, see, kid, there's nothing here at night that isn't there in the daytime. And I looked at him and I said, you mean he's here in the daytime too? And he's just like, what? And I was, I was afraid of my room in the daytime too for the longest time. And actually my dad and I talk about that every once in a while. We chuckle, you know, mm-hmm. he was trying to comfort me because he didn't really believe in paranormal stuff at the time, you know. He's learned to kind of believe in things because my mom and I would finish each other's sentences, you know. We wouldn't even be talking about anything in particular. She'd say things like, did you? And I'd say, yeah, I did. She's okay. And my father would be like, did you what? Stop doing that. I don't know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, we were always so in tune. And he's learned over the years that, okay, but there might be something to this paranormal world. But at the time, I was scared of my room in the daytime, too.
Yeah, you know, when you're sensitive, and it sounds to me like you have some clairaudient abilities. Like, keep in mind, too, though, Kat, that sometimes people can be in the same room with each other, and somebody can hear a loud crash, you know, just that magically comes out of the air, and other people say, I didn't hear that at all. And so it's kind of interesting how sensitives in particular can pick up on some of these things, or you could be two sensitives and one could pick up on it and the other one might not. But, you know, I've discovered that even in my own life, you know, that, not everyone's going to see, or, you know, here's an example. The woman I know, she had her granddaughter over, and she was 14 years old, and she was down in the basement, and she started screaming one night. And, of course, the lady that I know runs down, the mother, or actually the grandmother, runs down and asks her what's wrong. And she says, the man in the corner is staring at me. And I can't stand him looking at me anymore. So she looks over in the corner, doesn't see anything. I mean, it's just a corner, right? And she kept saying, mm-hmm. stop it already. And it just kept glaring at her, apparently, and all that stuff. See, that's the whole thing. It's just like, what is it within our minds or within our vision that all of a sudden allows us to see things that other people just do not see, even though they're both, it's right under your nose. It's very interesting. So, all right, so now you're having these abilities, and at least your parents aren't complete naysayers about it. I grew up with naysayers, so that's just common in my family. What do you suppose went on next with you? I mean, I feel like at this point you're in development, or something is happening, or you're awakening to your abilities, or something like that. What went on after that point?
Oh, just various things, like the town that I lived in Dieppe. The next town is Moncton. That's the bigger hub of the Maritimes there. And there's a place called Rebecca's Grave. And it's one, you know, pretty much every community has a location where all the teenagers like to go to this haunted location, you know, bring some beer with them or whatever. Well, this Rebecca's Grave was one of those spots that we used to frequent when I was in high school. The story was Rebecca lived in the 1800s, her and her mother, and they were branded as witches. So when they died, they buried them apparently face down, and they put concrete over their grave, and it's right next to the road. And so they buried them face down, put concrete on top, in hopes that would keep the deceased witches from rising again. We used to go there quite a bit, and I was really, really intrigued by the story, because some people would say she was hit by a car, and I thought, okay, this is the 1800s. Yeah. There were no cars in the Moncton area in the 1800s that I recall. So thinking back, this is my very first investigation. I went to the local library, and it was microfiche. Mm-hmm. And I asked the librarian, I'm looking for information on Rebecca's grave, mm-hmm. and found out her name was Rebecca Jane Lutz, I think was her middle name. And I don't recall how she actually passed away, but it wasn't a car. Yeah. But I also had the honor a couple years ago of meeting a descendant of Rebecca Lutz. And I actually had her as a guest on the show. It was really interesting to talk to her about Rebecca Lutz, because this is a location that, you know, as I said, as a teenager, I would go there with my friends, and we'd try to see if we could find, you know, is Rebecca's spirit going to be showing herself to us? You know, we found a cabin in the woods that supposedly was where she had lived. And I had confirmation a couple of years ago from her descendant that, yeah, that was indeed her cabin. Mm. So that was really, really interesting. Just various things like that. When I was pregnant, my husband and I lived in the Fredericton area in New Brunswick, and there is this place called Science East. It's an old, old building. I don't know how old it is. So we went there, and they have various science experiments, you know, and there was this one room in particular, they called it the shadow room. So you walk in, you can close a curtain, play around with lights, and it just shows you about different types of shadows with different lighting and whatnot. Well, my husband walks in, and I was pregnant with our first child at the time. And I walked in and I stopped. I couldn't go any further. It was like, I could not go further. Yeah. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I can't go in. He goes, oh, come on, you weirdo. Come on in. I'm like, well, no, I'm trying. Mm-hmm. I said, it's okay. You just go in, enjoy the shadows. I'll wait for you here. And then I had to use a washroom because I was pregnant, you know, you got to pee like 100 times every 5 minutes. So it's like, okay, here's the washroom. And as soon as I walked into the washroom, I felt this feeling of sadness and despair and just, you know, everything was lost. And when I came out, the feeling went away and I was really confused. And my husband could see on my face, he says, what's the matter? And I told him, I said, as soon as I walked in, this is how I felt. As soon as I left, I was fine. And he smiles. And I'm like, what the hell are you smiling? This is nothing to be smiling at. He says, turn around and tell me what you see. The doorway also had a barred door. So like there was barred. The building used to be the old county jail back in the day. And I didn't know. So I'm assuming I was picking up on whatever individual had been there at the time. I don't know if it was residual feelings I was picking up on, or if it was the actual spirit that was there, or what it was. But I find being pregnant just heightened these things. And my children are, well, one of my children doesn't like to admit that he is, but my daughter is sensitive. So we put that to the test after she was born. We went back to the shadow room, and I said to my husband, well, you take her, put her on your shoulders, walk in. I don't want to go in and she might see if I'm reacting a certain way, or I didn't want to contaminate, you know, or show her like, yeah, be afraid of this room. So I said, just go ahead. I'll follow you guys. I was able to go in the room then. She was very uncomfortable going into the room. So we didn't push it. We just, you know, I took her, I said, go again, go enjoy the shadows, you know. But she was very uncomfortable with that room as well. And come to find out that that particular room used to be the, the warden, I guess, mm-hmm. Of the jail. And from what the people at the museum told us, he was not a very nice man. So I might have been picking up on, and my daughter as well, might have been picking up on all the negativity that happened in that office.
How old was she?
She was 2.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thinking, I'm thinking about my nephew. All of a sudden, when you're talking about the age and how young she was and putting it to the test. Now, I didn't put anything to the test, but, you know, the property that my great grandfather built, I spent a lot of time on that property after grandparents had passed, and did a lot of ghost hunting, searching, whatever you want to call it. But I had my brother come over once with his son, who at the time was around, I believe, 2 to 3 years old. And he had asked him, do you want to go into the barn? And of course, the barn was 100 feet or whatever away, you know. And the kid turns around, takes one look at the barn, and starts doing this and saying, no, I don't want to go in there. No, I don't want to go in there now. Push comes to shove. I did do ghost hunting in that barn as well. And there was a number of different types of captures, including my batteries going dead and sparks flying out of my camera. And an argument that broke out when something was moved from one location to the other, and one swore that it was in this location and I swore it was in that location, and that it never, you know, this and that. And so there's a lot of things. And then I was attacked in there, you know, with a lot of severe stomach pains all of a sudden. And when you're on a property that has had an outhouse and didn't have an outhouse anymore, and you didn't know where the heck to go take refuge, you wonder about your ghost hunting abilities. Now, one of the things about when she just didn't want to go into that room, yeah, just kind of, it's interesting, like, empaths, sensitives, people that are ultra sensitive, we do light up like Christmas trees in some respect. Now, you also brought up one other thing that I'm familiar with, but I'm not, it didn't happen to me yet. It's when you said that you were trying to go into the door. I don't know if it was the door there, and you felt like something just was not allowing you to go any further. It was almost like you're being blocked. Okay, well, my sister went through that on that property that I was talking about, and she wanted to go through the front door of the house, and she kept saying, I can't go any further. It's like somebody is blocking me and not allowing me to step into this house any further. And, you know, that didn't surprise me, because there's all kinds of things that had come up there. Now, how long was it, though? How long did it take before you were actually able to go through that barrier, or did you say you turned around and just couldn't get in there at that point at all?
That first time I did not go in. It's like my body knew something was wrong or sensed something, and my body was just like, nope, you're not. It's like my body had its own mind, and it's like it just would not. I wanted to take those steps. Yeah. I couldn't take them.
Yeah.
But then once we went back with our daughter, and you know, and for those of you some of you might think that was a horrible thing to use our daughter as a test, but no, she wasn't comfortable. She was safe. We didn't force it. We didn't put her in. You know, prayers were said and everything to protect all of us. So everything was fine. We took all the precautions, and but yeah, I was able to go in once I wasn't pregnant anymore. But I do believe that while I was pregnant, my senses were heightened. And that's probably why I wasn't able to go in.
You know, you bring up a good point here that I'm not sure anyone has really addressed, at least not from the shows I've listened to yet. When you're pregnant with a child, that eventually, you were pregnant with her, right? Yeah. Yep. Okay, so what's interesting about that is of course, I don't know if anyone could ever prove this, if there was ever any type of an effect that occurred attached to you or whatever at the time when you were pregnant, and then here you have the child's born, it's a couple of years later, you bring the child that was in you at the time into, or try to bring it into this building. She's resistant, she doesn't want to go in there. And you know, you're wondering, you know, where did this exactly come from? And was there any effect on you more than you realize back when you walked in there that may have transferred to this child? And I don't know if anyone could ever answer that, but it just dawned on me when you said that, because I'm like, oh, how interesting. But to bring the child that was in your belly at the time into a building and then have her react that way, you know, was it because she was young and very sensitive, or was it the fact that something happened when you went there the first time that somehow transferred onto her as a baby? So that's interesting. That's fascinating.
I think it's because it runs in the family, sensitives. So I'm thinking, even though she was in my stomach, she was already probably showing signs of having those gifts as well. Yeah. And because I'm carrying her, it was just heightened. So both of us probably were hypersensitive to the paranormal.
Yeah.
We used to go to this Science East building very, like, we went there a lot. They used to have, like, living sticks, you know, those insects.
Yeah, I know.
It was.
We called them walk. I can't remember, but there's a word for them. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called, but you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
They're really cool. And then you have, I can't remember what these are called either, but you've got this orb that if you touch it, your hair goes up. Oh, I can't remember what those are called. So it was like interactive science. It was learning. Yeah. It was really interesting. So, you know, we would bring the kids there later on. And yeah, it was very fascinating. But like I said, the first time I didn't know that it was the county jail. You know, my husband never thought to tell me. And once I started saying that, yeah, I'm starting to feel things here, then he's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And how big was this space that you were going into? Was it just like a small shed, or what was the size of this space?
Well, it was a relatively large building.
Okay.
The shadow room used to be the office of the warden. So it was a fair size. And they had it separate. They had it separated in two. They had a curtain splitting the room in half. So you could walk in and you could read about shadows and all that. And then you'd go on the other side of the curtain, and then it would be like a projector or whatever. And they'd have like different colors and different shaped lights. And you could just play around with various lights to see what kind of shadow you're going to be having. So it was pretty interesting. But
oh, that's cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So now you're having these experiences, and they are now also transferring over to your child as well, which it doesn't surprise me at all. And usually there is a thing, if a parent has some type of trauma, it can pass genetically down into their child. Even though you might not categorize that as trauma, this is just another illustration to people about when someone is pregnant with somebody, if you go through a type of trauma or anything, your child may or may not have some types of additional sensitivities or abilities based on the fact of this trauma. And I had a whole show on that, and it's generational trauma or whatever. And this even goes way back, not just from your parent. This goes way back from your grandparents and their parents and all this stuff, because we are, you know, human beings made up all kinds of genetic genes. And all these genes don't necessarily just come from one set of parents here. So it can go back 6-7 generations, depending on whatever happened back then. But so now you've got these abilities. Have you ever wondered who in the family may have started this whole ball rolling, now that we're talking about generational genetics here? Have you ever figured that out?
No, I never really figured it out, but I remember my mother telling me that her grandmother, she was a midwife, I guess, but I guess she had abilities as well, or was it her great grandmother? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Anyways, she had abilities as well, and so I really don't know how far back it goes. Mm-hmm.
Might go back away. It might even go back to war days. You know, back in the day, there's a lot of fighting and a lot of wars that went on and everything like that. So this can go back well into that as well. So yeah, interesting though. Very interesting. Okay. So now you're pretty much, let's just say we're out of high school and we're, you know, moving and shaking with our life. What other kinds of experiences have you had that seemed a little bit unusual or noteworthy here that you can think of?
Well, there was another, again, in New Brunswick, my husband and I, when we were living in the Fredericton area, about an hour away from there, there's a heritage village there called King's Landing. And we used to go there several times every year. It's just, you know, some buildings were from the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, and they just made this village. And, you know, one of those types of villages where you walk into a particular building, a house, like say a blacksmith, and they're talking to you as if they're actually living from that era. You walk into a particular house and the women are cooking, preparing things for their family. You know, the husbands are outside working whatever it is that their job was. Women were making, they had great big looms where they'd be actually making their fabric, where they could be making their clothing. Very fascinating place. Always love going to places like that. And some of the buildings I'd walk in and I'd look at my husband, I'm like, yeah, there's something over there in that corner. And he'd be like, oh, okay. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going in that room because I don't like the feeling. And he's like, okay. So, he would always trust my feelings. So just things like that throughout my life that I've had.
Well, you know, when and this brings up a good point about theaters, museums, even outdoor types of living places like that. You know, there have been reports, depending on, of course, which avenue you want to go here. But let's start, since you brought up the kind of like the living narrative. There have been reports of people dressed up in period clothing that are also engaged in walking around these properties. And most people think that these people are part of the theatrics of that property. And until somebody questions it, like who's the new kid or interesting outfit or whatever, or maybe they might just have a blank stare on their face and they might not really acknowledge them very much and then go, oh, how rude, you know, or something like that, you know, with all kinds of, or ask some really unusual question or say something very unusual that would make a person wonder or think twice about the individual. This stuff is, and they look about as real as you and me. And that's what I find fascinating because I wish I could go back in time now. I wish I could have something like a movie show play out in front of me and show me if I've ever had a situation where I have literally talked to, run into, been near, been by, or anything of something that wasn't from our life but appeared to be from our life. Isn't that just kind of fascinating to you? Don't you find that interesting?
Yes. Yes. You know, who's to say that you might have met a really strange individual and thought they're really odd? Well, maybe that was someone from the past that happened to be in your time frame, that, you know, you're sharing the same time frame. It could have been, you know, somebody from then. We don't know.
Well, now that you bring that up, and I can't remember if I've ever shared this story with you, or maybe we've had this story at one point because we've talked with each other a lot throughout the time here. There was a time lapse story, I guess, that was shared with me, a true story, that I met somebody at a conference a few years back, not a lot, you know, who had told the story about how she was coming out of her apartment and that a very old fashioned vintage type vehicle pulled up into her or the space next to her car in the parking lot. Okay, so the gentleman kind of summons her over to the window. She was just walking out like as if she had to go somewhere. And the guy summons her over to the window. Now, keep in mind, you know, in this day and age, we have a lot of car shows. And so people love these car shows. So when you see a vintage car going down the highway, you automatically say, oh, there must be a car show going on because you don't see them out and about that often. And anyway, so she approached this gentleman who, I can't remember if he rolled down the window, probably vintage car. They didn't have electric back then. So he probably rolled down the window and he asked her a crazy question. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something that was so unusual and so bizarre that it was kind of like, well, kind of like everybody knows the answer to that, you know, mm-hmm. But he asked her something. And so she just kind of said, well, this is da, 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 to answer the question. And then I think she turned around and went back inside and then it just kind of disappeared or went away. And so after talking with her a little bit about this, I said, well, so what do you think happened there? And she says, the only thing I can conclude that to is that that was not normal. It was like something from a time lapse. It was something weird. I mean, literally the car was, she said, well, you could touch it. The guy looked like you could touch him, you know, but she said what tripped it all off was his question. It was just so bizarre. And so anyway, she shared that story at the conference. I wish I could remember what he said, but I don't, but it was just unusual. And you hear these cases all the time. Now, I can't remember. Did you not tell me at one point in time that you do little mini investigations or things like that? Or you have a group that you are in charge of where you guys go in and investigate people's homes?
Yeah, I'm not in charge of it. It's a group called Canadian Supernatural Research Society here out of the Ottawa Valley in Ontario, Canada. And the lead investigator and founder is Katie Turner. We have great, great team. Right now, we only have four ladies. We had started out with, I think, seven individuals. But, you know, people's lives get really busy. And now we're down to four. There's April and Liz, myself and Katie. Great, great girls. And because of COVID, we haven't done a lot of investigating the past couple of years. But we live in a military community. And we've done a few PMQs, which is the military housing. We've done other houses. We've done businesses in the valley here. We've gone to Quebec as well to businesses or private homes. And it's very fascinating to me how I've said this countless times on my show as well, that the thing that fascinates me the most about the paranormal is it doesn't matter what country you're from, what religion, you know, what your beliefs are, what culture, everybody has these paranormal experiences. And it just fascinates me. I mean, every culture cannot be wrong at the same time having these similar encounters. So being fortunate enough to having people ask us to go investigate, we really enjoy going into the house to find out, but we also like to help these people because there's so many people out there that are having paranormal encounters. And a lot of we've seen families break up because, you know, one spouse has had these encounters and the other one doesn't believe them, and they don't feel that they can actually open up and tell their spouse or their family or friends, you know, this is what I've encountered, you know, I'm not crazy. So it's nice to be able to go into these homes to show these people that you're not alone. There are other people experiencing these as well. And when you can see the relief in their body language, in their eyes, you know, it's like, thank you for believing me, you know. But we always ask them, you know, we have to ask the tough questions. Are you on medication? What's your medication? You know, because it could be medicated, you know, their medication could be affecting what they're seeing. We don't know. So we have to ask these when we ask questions with every client, you know. But yeah, it's so fascinating to know that so many people around the world for generations, you know, for so many years are experiencing these. There has to be something to it.
Well, you know, and a lot of times too, it's like, what has caused the individual all of a sudden to, like, say, start having these experiences? So you go in and, you know, I think about many different situations where even when I started, my husband and I, you know, were married, this wasn't the focus of our marriage, you know, for many, many years. And then I just thought it would be really interesting to go to a bed and breakfast because I felt that was safer, you know, that because I figured nothing's going to hurt me there. You know, you haven't heard reports or whatever, but that's not true. But the thing is, as we went for my first anniversary, I think our first anniversary to a haunted villa somewhere, I think it was South or North Carolina. It was one of the two. I always get them mixed up because they're so close there. But I just told him not to make fun of anything on the property because the woman at the desk had said to us, you know that there's no refunds, right? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, you know, I said, we're not even staying in the house. We're staying in a villa outside of the house. Well, guess what was more haunted? Because it was by a creek. Guess what was more haunted than being in the house where we were at? And so I wrote this in my book. There was so many things that happened, but he made the mistake of thinking this was all a joke. And when we went through the door, he said, you know, bring it on, ghosts. And I thought, that's a mistake. You don't ever say when you walk into a haunted, possibly haunted property, bring it on, ghosts, because they will. And they did all night long. And I made him apologize at one point to these ghosts. I wasn't afraid at that point. I just said, see, there we are in a haunted place. But it creeped me out in the morning. I couldn't wait to get, there was just some unusual vibe in this villa. I couldn't get out of there fast enough. I was so afraid. But thank God that throughout the years, my husband didn't give up on me because my abilities were now heightening, or my interest in this was getting so involved, I guess, that it made me stronger at picking up this stuff or having these experiences. And then I, you know, over time, then you start learning about attachments, you start learning about haunting your own homes, you start learning about whether the poltergeist is from you or whether it's from something in the home. So there's many aspects over a period of time that I learned about. So I'm going to put this back on you right now. So in doing these investigations and seeing what this energy can do to people's families, what have you learned about all of this in, you know, at even up to this date? What have you learned in looking back?
I used to think that only certain locations had paranormal activities, but I've learned that pretty much everywhere is haunted. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the individual if you're going to be able to pick up on a location. I mean, you could have 100 people in one house over the past few years never sent something, but then one or two individuals will. Mm-hmm. And I always use the example, you could go walking out in the forest, you know, there's deer and bear and whatnot. Yeah. And, you know, how many people are actually going to see all this wildlife? Yeah. But one individual could go into the forest and always see wildlife. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's like that with the spirit as well. Some people are just magnets to wildlife and little kids wanting to go to them. And I feel it's the same way with spirits as well. And you know, other entities, some people are just magnets. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they embrace what they're able to see and sometimes they don't. And I think it depends on how much support they have from family and friends on how they're going to process and how they're going to act after experiencing all this.
Yeah, I agree. Would you not consider yourself in some way to be like a beacon?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. I always say to people, wherever they are, here I come, or if I'm there, don't worry, they'll come out and play, or they'll come out and show me something. They'll show me something in some respect that'll make me believe that I just had. And not all experiences are the same. That's the whole thing. It's not like you can go into a building and someone says, well, when I was by the stairs, for example, I had this happen to me. Well, you can go by those stairs and you may not ever have that happen to you, but you might have something else happen to you on a different level or, you know, wherever. And I have found that, you know, the reason why I'm able to keep writing stories in my life is because every time I have a different aspect that showed to me, for example, the disappearing pill that I talked about on one of my shows recently. One moment I was like, I missed my mouth and I couldn't find this stupid pill. And it was 2 weeks and all of a sudden I threw my jammies on the bed one day. And keep in mind, the covers go up, the covers go off, and then everything's being thrown around. And right underneath my jammies, after 2 weeks, there was my little purple pill. And that's what I'm trying to say. So I'm thinking to myself going, oh, interesting. Very interesting. Well, thank you for returning my pill, you know, kind of thing. But I knew that it wasn't on that bed for 2 weeks. I knew that if anything, it would have hit the floor. Mm-hmm. But it was like it disappeared. Literally, I thought about this yesterday, actually. It was like it disappeared into thin air. It was the weirdest, bizarrest thing. And then someone decided to return it. I mean, it was just very, very strange. So along that note, I should ask you this question. Have you ever had happen to you something so undeniably strange that you couldn't figure out, even if you tried, you just knew it was paranormal in some way? Can you think about a situation that was like really strange? You know, like the disappearing pill or whatever that came back to you. Have you ever had a situation like that before?
Oh, yeah. You have missing items sometimes. And I actually say, if I can't find something, I'll actually out loud say, this isn't funny anymore. You can put the item, like say it's keys, for example, your house keys or whatever. You can put them back now, you know, and, you know, stop missing. I'm tired of your shenanigans now. Please put them back. And then you'll turn around and, you know, even though you've looked at that particular location 50 times, there it is. You know, where it's like it wasn't there for the past hour that I've been looking for this object and suddenly it's there again. Like, how does that happen?
Did I tell you about my missing purse? That same kind of situation, different house, was upstairs in my office. I had my little, it's kind of like one of those passport holder kind of purses type things, cross body kind of purse. Had it on my shelf, same place, never, I would never put it anywhere else. There's just no, why would I, right? I had to go downstairs for a moment, told my husband, I've got to run, otherwise I'm going to miss, like say going to the bank before it closes, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I got to run up and get my purse. I forgot it upstairs. Go upstairs and the purse is gone. And so you're like, what the heck? Where's my purse? Now, it's just my husband and I, right? Mm-hmm. And so then I had, you know, him help me. And what we discovered was when I like to put a towel or a blanket over my chair, it just feels more comfortable to me and it drapes all the way down to the floor. Well, he went upstairs and I was sitting here just tearing the house apart going, I do not know what happened to my purse. And just peeking out just a little bit from underneath the chair, underneath where the blankie was the strap that went to my purse. Keep in mind, it's just my husband and me. He has no reason to be in my office. And so he said, I found your purse. And I said, well, where did you find it? He said it was hiding under your chair in your office. Now, there's no way it could have fallen and gone under there. Like I said, the blanket drapes down to the floor. It would never have been able to get directly underneath that chair. But the hint was it put the strap out so that way he found it. And I thought, oh, my God. You know, it's interesting when you have situations like that. But the thing that frustrates me, of course, and maybe I don't know who you visualize when things go missing, because I really don't know if it's a trickster child. I don't know if it's a trickster adult or whatever. Yeah, it's just some kind of a trickster playing a joke on you and then returning it or something. But don't you find that kind of, it's just kind of fascinating, you know?
Yeah. And it, whenever I ask my family, when I say, okay, I'm looking for this item, and then, you know, they help me find it, and then they say, it's right here. And I'm like, it wasn't there before I asked for help to find it. I swear it was not. And then they look at me like, okay.
I know. Looney Tune time. The paranormal is fascinating. The energy of people and animals and everything that we experience is interesting. And there isn't, like, again, no two people usually have always the same experience out there. And that's what makes us so intriguing to continue. Are you still doing investigation work at all?
Yeah, well, I haven't done it. The group hasn't done it in a long time. Like I said, COVID and everyone's busy. Like things are open now. We can go do investigations, but everybody's so busy right now, you know, with real life that we can't really go investigate right now. It's difficult getting everybody together at the same time.
Tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, well, first of all, like you said, it's called Paranormal Heart Podcast. My email, if you want to say hello, or if you, you're looking for someone to investigate in your area, I know a lot of people, I might be able to hook you up. If you want to be on the show, you can email me at paranormalheart13@gmail.com. My show is pre-recorded, and it gets released on the second and last Sunday of every month. And you can find it on YouTube and Podbean are the two main platforms. But I'm on, like, Apple has it, Amazon, you know, pretty much wherever you find podcasts.
Kat, thanks so much for being on the show. Always happy to have my friend Kat on the show. Listeners, if you want to see this show visually, go to my talk show. Yes, I'm on TV. TV talk show at paraflix.com. That's www.paraflix.com. And while you are on there, sign up for the 3 free day trial that they offer, and then go into browse, scroll down to talk shows, and you will find me at Disembodied Voices. I am now going into yet another season, and I'm really happy about being on this platform. And there are also other guests that you have listened to, especially if you are one of my loyal listeners. They are visually on Paraflix. And, of course, this show will also play on ParaX Radio Network in the future. And so lots of different places to hear this show. But again, visually, if you finally want to see us talking in action and see the visuals that we're discussing, go to Paraflix. Thank you so much, everyone, again, and have a good night.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information. Or go to Amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or ParaX Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, ParaX Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.